about religion that we have to remember when we're talking about that makes it such a hot topic issue is because we're talking about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who is the Most High? Who is the divine authority? It's all about the claim to the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody. We're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge. So ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Hello, Universal Hive Mind. Today is February 12th, 2024. Happy 2024, everyone. It's great to be back on. I'm your host, Nate Kapp, and welcome to the 65th Cubbyhole Podcast, where critical topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. The website for today's show is cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyHole.com. And if you prefer to listen to the show on a different platform, you can also listen with Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, TuneIn Radio, Pandora, Simplecast, YouTube, Odyssey, Minds, BitChute, and much more. If this is your first time listening to the Cubbyhole Podcast, welcome to the show. But I definitely recommend that you go back to episode number one and start there and work your way forward in order so that way you get the maximum value of the overarching message that is stored within this Cubbyhole Podcast. Okay, it's very important that we do so. And also, I have slides that I created for this show today. So if you can go to cubbyhole.com, go to the top where it says episodes 51 plus, click on that, go all the way down to where it says show 65, and there you will find the slides. And it is very important to follow along with the slides, because that way you're going to have a better, well-rounded idea of what I'm conveying in this episode and any episodes that have slides, okay? So definitely make sure you do that. And on that note, hopefully everybody's journey is going well, all things considered. Today's show is going to be a very, very important continuation of the last episode. And we've got a lot of catching up to do, a lot to talk about. We're going to go further into the third degree of esoteric Freemasonry, especially dealing with the X symbol. And we're going to get into some very important correspondences, especially dealing with Osiris. And we're going to get into time management and time and attention. And also probably the second half of the show is going to be all about time and the Weeping Virgin Goddess tracing board. And then that's going to be followed up with the Zodiac. So it's going to be a very, very jam-packed show, and it's going to take as long as it needs to take. So there is a lot to cover. Now, I think I've let you guys know a little bit about the presentations that I've been putting out lately. And so basically, I put a new presentation out once a month now with Ethereal Arts Bazaar at the venue called The Lounge at the End of the Universe in Boise, Idaho. And essentially, I'm giving a relatively short presentation, somewhere between 20 to 30 minutes long. They're really pushing for me to do 20-minute presentations, so it's definitely a challenge to really consolidate and condense the information into 20 minutes, which is really cool because it goes with the outcasting show. And that's where I put the presentations. I put that within the show because that's what the show is already. It's already a 5 to 30 minute show. So it works perfectly with what I'm already saying. And basically, it's just a really good way to get out in front of people and work on my public speaking. And it also helps me with understanding my equipment and getting better at learning the equipment that it takes to, you know, use to be able to do these presentations live. And again, it's just a really great way to condense the information and whet people's appetite to want to go further into the information and hopefully go into the cubbyhole and go further into the more dense knowledge that is laid out in this tapestry that's put together in this show. So my latest presentation is titled Allegorical ET, which is something that I've pretty much covered on show number 58 in the cubbyhole regarding Darwin's evolution theory and marriage. And anyway, the presentation seemed to be well received, but definitely seemed like some people were a little let down that I didn't cover any actual events or actual sightings or actual aliens and ETs. But, you know, if it's something you're interested in, I definitely will leave a link in the description and you can check that out. And, you know, it's definitely information that I put together in a way that was a little different than show number 58. So if you heard 58 and you think it's the same, it's really not. I mean, the imagery is definitely more beneficial, and I think I got the point across a little better. Now, even though I do give references in the description, I just want to give a shout out to the deceased learned men who have essentially sacrificed their time and their attention of their lives beyond what most unfortunately will ever do in this world. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Manly Palmer Hall, who I just really, really have learned so much from dealing with, you know, the mysteries, anything to do with the occult, anything to do with esotericism and ancient Egypt, and, you know, everything that you've heard on this show, there's a little bit I have taken from Manly Palmer Hall's work that I've borrowed, if you want to call it that. I mean, no one owns any knowledge, but, you know, you definitely are, if you're learning from someone, you're going to borrow what they have laid out. And Manly P. Hall has been such a great inspiration. It's somebody who I strive to be more like in my work. And he definitely was one of the greatest living beings in the last couple hundred years, you know. And then there's also Alvin Boyd Kuhn, who I really appreciate his work dealing with ancient Egypt and also learning the alphabet, learning how the alphabet began and how the letters came to be. And his work is just very, very important. And so is Gerald Massey. And Gerald Massey, let me tell you, if you're trying to learn the solar cult especially, his work is a must. You have to have Gerald Massey's work in order to really understand the ancient Egyptian solar mythos. And it can really help you understand what's going on today. But his work is dire when it comes to that topic. And also Harold Bailey, anything to do with symbolism, and Mustafa Gadala. I have been studying his work for probably the past few years. And his book, Egyptian Divinities, with the subtitle The All Who Are the One, is just a great book to have to really help you understand Osiris and understand the ritual of Osiris. And he may still be alive. I'm not really sure. Hopefully he is. You know, sorry to Mustafa if you are still alive. I just haven't found any information that states whether he is or is not. And but either way, I really, really appreciate his work. Also, Albert Mackey, who he wrote the Freemasonic encyclopedias, and they are just so important to helping us understand the jargon of Freemasonry to really help us understand definitions and help us understand the esoteric and the exoteric and the fraternity, you know. So it's very, very dense and very, very important to help us learn modern Freemasonry and even into the ancient Egyptian sciences. Also, Jessie L. Weston, she wrote the book From Ritual to Romance. And if you're trying to understand the Arthurian mythos, King Arthur, then I highly recommend that you get this book. And it is very, very important to helping us understand this whole ancient Egyptian mythos as well. Also, Rudolf Steiner, anything to do with Rosicrucianism. And also Joseph Campbell, who did the book A Hero with a Thousand Faces. I mean, that is so crucial to understanding the idea behind the Zodiac and also this whole idea that I've been sharing with Hiram Abiff and the third degree of Freemasonry. He did such a great job in his book, and I highly recommend that. And also Robert Hewitt Brown, anything that he has talked about regarding Masonic astronomy, dealing with the stellar mythos, is very important because it can really help us understand the modern Freemasonry. Also, Wallace Budge, anything to do with ancient Egypt and really trying to understand the Netchers, meaning the gods of ancient Egypt. He did such a good job in his book, The Egyptian Book of the Dead. And I highly recommend anything to do with Wallace Budge and ancient Egypt is a must because it can really help us understand how to read the sciences. And, you know, having Freemasonry with his work really helps us understand and appreciate his work a lot better. And I don't think he had really any idea of Freemasonry, but his work is very important. The same with Gerald Massey. They're dealing with Freemasonry. They just don't know what they're truly dealing with, because maybe they just didn't have access to the knowledge of Freemasonry or esoteric Freemasonry. But Charles Leadbeater, a really excellent Mason who did such an amazing job at explaining a lot of the ancient Egyptian mythos as well as symbolism. And he really, something he opened my eyes up to was the occult sciences of the chakra system, and so many other giants out there who, because these are all these people that I just named off, these are the true giants of our time in the past, you know, 200 years. These are among the true giants, okay? Because there's a lot of other people that I'm not mentioning, but you know, there is just so many people who have really, really sacrificed their whole life to get this information out. And I just want to give a big shout out to all of them. But there is one who has really paved the way into the mythos. Somebody who has been spoken about pretty often around here on the Cubbyhole, and that is Albert Churchward. And his works are very important to this whole mystery. And I really can't think of anybody who has really laid it out as well as him. And but at the same time, you do need these other amazing authors to really appreciate and arrive to his work. So but his work is just a must if you're trying to understand the ancient Egyptian mythos, okay? So all these people that I've stated, they are extremely important to finding the pieces and putting this whole picture back together. So it is very, very, very important to really take this work very serious. I mean, these are the people you're going to have to work with. if you really want to understand this information a lot deeper. So on the last episode of 2023, show number 64, I covered something that I believe to be extremely dire in a human being's understanding of what has truly taken place in our world today. And so that symbol, the symbol that I covered in that episode, was the symbol letter X. And I covered it pretty in depth in that show. And I'm going to continue to go further with this symbol as we move forward through this show. But I also talked about the skull and crossbones. I talked about the coffin. I talked about the Chiru or Kairu symbol symbolism. And I also talked about the Ru symbol and the epigominal days, which is the five extra holy days or days out of time. And I'm going to continue talking about that. And I talked about the number 15, the 555, and the subversive symbolism and the X-ray symbolism and Asar and the casket. I talked about Hiram Abiff, which really is the main legend who really ties all of this together, and especially with modern Freemasonry back to ancient Freemasonry and, of course, Osiris. And then I talked about the ancient Egyptian mythos dealing with stellar, solar, and lunar hero cults. And I talked about the inner journey of the soul, the spirit, the mind, the body, the brain, gematria, eschatology, which is something I'm going to really, really get into in the next few shows. And I talked about resurrection and metamorphosis and so many other important topics. So it was a very jam-packed show. And now I'm going to continue expanding on this X symbol and really continue this unpacking of this information that is associated with this symbol. And I'm really hoping that people really hear what I'm saying with this particular symbol, because I'm telling you, this X symbol and all that is associated with it truly is the order of the day. So that being said, let's go ahead and go to the first slide with the big X symbol. Okay. Now, last year was the year 2023. Okay. And let me just really help people understand something very important when it comes to gematria. Okay. So when a millennia is every 1,000 years, right? And that means that is the time when the first number changes, okay? So that is very important to that time. But then every century is every 100 years, right? So that means that the year 2000, from that point up until the year 2100, that is the first century, okay? So there's the first century at 2100, okay? But those first two numbers don't change unless there has been a century or a millennia. But annually, there are numbers that are changing every year, okay? So we have to pay attention to those two numbers every year, okay? No matter what, we pay attention to those two numbers. So last year was the year 2023, which is you would only pay attention to the last two numbers because those are the numbers that are constantly changing. And that doesn't mean don't pay attention to the first number. It just means the numbers that are annually changing are the ones that are really significant when it comes to understanding the numerology and what is associated with the numerology, okay? So last year was 2023, so the 23 is the number that we pay attention to. So that was 2 plus 3, which equals 5, right? And that is very, very significant to this X symbol, okay? So the year 2024 is what we're in now, and so that means that the year has changed. The annual year has changed, and therefore we're in a year of change in those two digits. Okay, so the year 24 is 2 plus 4, which equals 6. So we have, last year was the 5 in gematria, and then this year is the 6 in gematria. Okay, and then when we look at this X symbol, it is the 24th letter of the alphabet, right? And the 24th letter of the alphabet is very significant to this year, 2024, okay? So 24th letter of the alphabet. So how this ties into 2023 is through this alphabetical letter being the X. So this is about understanding the 6 of this year and then the 5 of last year, but how they come together is through the 5 points of the X, which is corresponding to the X of the 24th letter of the alphabet. Okay? So I hope you can really see what I'm saying with that connection. And that is a very deep, significant connection. So this is also dealing with the 5 epigonal days of a 365-day year cycle, annual cycle. Okay, so that means that last year was more significant to the 5 epigonal days because it was the year of 5. Okay, 2 plus 3 equals 5. All right, so 5 epigonal days. Remember, I said it means days out of time. Okay, so that is very, very significant because 360 degrees is a full circle. 365 days is a full annual cycle. And the way that the ancient Egyptians handled this was through geometry, through the mathematical equation of the 5 points of the X. Okay, this is what ties all seasons together, okay, into one, into the center point, which is the 5th point, okay? So this is very, very significant because this is about understanding the pure form of the X, which is 5, okay? 5 points. And this is the symbol of Osiris because the ancient Egyptians associated the X or the 5 extra days, the epigonal days, as Osiris's family, including Osiris, okay? So this is about understanding the 5 holy days of the year, the days out of time. And so this means a close in time, okay? The way that we keep time of an annual cycle, this is a close. This is when the year comes to a close for 5 days, and then it opens again. Right? So that's the way we have to do the thinking. Now, just to reiterate some of the things about what the X also means, because these meanings really help us understand what is associated with this symbol to help us really consolidate and condense the meaning behind this X symbol. So it also means back off. It also means, you know, because when you put your arms up in an X position towards someone, it means back off, right? Also, it means treasure, as in, you know, X marks the spot of the treasure, like when you look at a treasure map. And it also means the on and off switch, if you want to call it that. Because remember, off means out of, right? Out of time, something is off, right? something is also on. Why? Because this is about understanding the fire in the middle of the pyramid, because it's about dealing with the bird's eye view of the pyramid, where the point in the middle is raised up, and that is the on. Okay, that is, it's like a light switch. It's an on and off switch, because it's about the 5 extra days out of time, but also it means something is restarting or turning back on, right? Just like in Osiris. Osiris is all about the god of death and rebirth, okay? So when we think about that, you know, death would be off and then on would be rebirth, okay? And it also means to multiply, right? Multiply is dealing with what? The times tables, okay? And it also means cancel. You know, that's why we see this X so much during the time of cancel culture, okay? Because it's about canceling people. It's about book burning, right? A book burning, people don't realize that a book burning is all about canceling information, okay? It's not just about physically burning books. It can also mean, you know, cutting people off from electricity. If somebody hit the switch of the electric, all the information, all the PDF books and everything would be gone in an instant. Same with internet. If the internet goes out, we'll still have maybe, you know, a little bit of, if we have electric, we can still be able to, you know, upload information and be able to get on our computers and look at the information there. But again, it's a form of book burning. And so we live in, you know, in all these different websites that are, or video platforms that are making sure that information, or like, you know, this type of information or different types of content is being systematically censored and blocked. That is part of this cancel culture. It is a book burning. Okay. So that's what this X also represents. And it also represents wrongdoing. Something is incorrect. Because whenever something is incorrect, you exit out, right? And that is very important because, you know, if you look at a check mark, it looks like a square, a Masonic square, which means moral action, okay? So it means correct. So X is a very, very important symbol with understanding morality as well, okay? Now, this is all about getting back to pure forms, okay, with this X symbol, okay, because it's about getting us closer and closer to truth, which means getting closer and closer to freedom, literally and symbolically and spiritually. Now, we have to remember that Osiris is an ancient Egyptian nature force. He's an elemental power in nature, okay? First and foremost. Okay, so we cannot think of this figure as being just literal. Okay, we have to understand what he is associated with that is literal, like the actual physical nature. Okay, but we also have to really truly understand this figure allegorically within, you know, esoterically. Okay. That is very important to understanding this whole science of Osiris. He is a Necher, okay? So a Necher means nature, and he is an archetype as a symbol that basically he retains the sacred geometry and science of the terrestrial and the celestial cycles, okay? So he contains the central mystery that essentially brings all of this whole major story all together, okay? So he's the legend of the whole ancient Egyptian mystery. And this is what we're trying to lay out on the round table and organize it for all of us to really get a good look at it and be able to decipher what this whole mystery is really revealing, okay? So, Asar, or Osiris, is an evolution tool that is meant to attain and maintain the sovereign astronomer back onto Earth, back into you, you know, because you are the universe. You are the unity within, right? And you are you. Because it's about understanding that astronomy, which is about understanding the seventh step of the spiral staircase or winding staircase, however you want to look at that, it is the seventh step of the third set of steps. Okay? That means it is that final step. Because astronomy is all about sovereignty. If you become astronomer, you become sovereign. That's what this whole mystery is really all about. That's what Osiris helps us get back to, symbolically and allegorically, of course. So when we really begin to study Osiris and all the attributes associated with this figure, we'll see the number significance and the symbolic form of the numbers that are interwoven with this archetype and nature. And we really have to study as much as we can regarding the solar and the lunar and the stellar mythos to really have a well-rounded eye view of this mystery. And of course, you know, we definitely have to have an understanding of Freemasonry esoterically and exoterically and, you know, modern and ancient. It is very, very important because it really is all Freemasonry when you really look at the bigger picture. So as someone really works their way back from the number 15, especially, what happens is there begins to unfold the pieces of Osiris back to his pure form, which in turn is analogous to the 12 knights of the round table, you know, each with a piece of the puzzle or a piece of the truth, which is represented by the chalice or the grail in the middle of the table. And the table is Osiris, or the throne of the eye, which is the zodiac, right? Especially dealing with the solar mythos. So it's all about cycles, you know, the science of when to plant and when to harvest. And it's the science of how to rise and why we fall. And when there's light and when there's darkness, it's about understanding the relationships with nature internally and externally. Okay. It's like, think about the mechanics and gears of a clock. Okay. And they're all moving together in harmony, right? One gear is hitting another gear, and that gear is hitting another gear. And if you could just think about that organically all through the whole universe, it is like that, only it has spirit within it, okay? So it's all about maintaining balance and continuing evolution. That is what this whole mechanized universe really is. It's just one giant organism with, you know, trillions and, you know, just absolutely more, almost infinite other organisms within it. You know, it is truly one of the most fascinating things to really try to wrap your head around. And it is very beautiful. So we have to think of the idea that we each, you know, came into this world from the womb or from zero, okay? We came from zero. Just really think about this. Don't think about it literal, but just think about it in the sense of the symbol of the zero. And we came from zero as one. And we grew out of the womb. We grew up to 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and so on, right? But then spiritually, we eventually begin to return to the womb or the tomb, okay? Spiritually, okay? Think about this. We're trying to get back to the womb, back to the tomb, which is about finding the pieces. And you can look at those pieces as the numbers, okay? Finding the numbers in reverse, like 15 and 14 and 12 and 11 and 10 and 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then back to the divine zero, right? The O, okay? The womb, the tomb. So this is about understanding that we come from a place and eventually we have to return to that place spiritually. And of course, even physically, you can look at it that way too. But I'm going to go a lot further into this as I move forward. And of course, you know, anybody who has been listening to me knows that I've been really getting deep into the pieces of Osiris and trying to bring all those pieces back together to reunite this this image or this idea or this pure form, okay? Because we have to understand that Osiris is really only a science that truly helps us understand the creator. That's all it is. It's just, you know, we're so lost with all these fragments, and we have to try so hard to put the pieces back together to really see this full, beautiful, simple, pure form, which is the creator, God, essentially, right? And that means that this intelligence of the whole universe is infinite. And that's what the circle is by itself. The circle on its own is the divine, infinite creator symbol, okay? It is all within all. And therefore, if you were to think of that circle to be shattered and spread throughout the world as information, then you would look at that as a way, you know, this whole science of Osiris, it's a way to help us remember that full circle, to remember that full, beautiful, simple circle, that divine circle, that divine perfect circle, okay? And therefore, if we're really staying true to the legend of Osiris, it can really help us get closer to that. Because as we assemble Osiris, then we start to find the appreciation for this grand being that is the way I look at it, the intelligence of the whole universe, which is pure, which is all love, okay? It is the circle of life, period. And I think that, you know, as we go through this information, we're going to really start to see how this really unfolds. So now, I just want to be clear. We have to understand the numbers and their associations to, you know, each part of the phases of the ancient Egyptian mythos. Okay, so when we're talking about the number 14, we're talking about the ritual of Asar or Osiris being dismembered. And that means being chopped up into pieces. And 14 is a very important number, okay, when we're dealing with the lunar phase, okay? So we have to understand it's kind of ambiguous for a very important reason of how many pieces Osiris is chopped up into, okay? Because dismemberment just means, it can mean two things. It can mean being dismembered, chopped up into multiple pieces that maybe aren't countable. But we can also find where, you know, certain phases tell us certain numbers for a reason. But also dismemberment means the head is chopped off, right? The head could be chopped off the shoulders, or it could be chopped off the phallus, okay? So you just really think about it like that symbolically, and it can really help you stay oriented and definitely start to see that it's more about really paying attention to the sciences that are associated with Osiris in different phases, okay? So in the lunar phase, 14 is the waxing and waning angles of the moon in particular, okay? So 14 waning from full moon to new moon, which is no moon, you know? And then waxing being from new moon to full moon, okay? So no moon to a full bright moon, full of light. So darkness to light. That's the waxing, okay? Just always remember, waning is going from light to dark, and waxing is going from dark to light, okay? So it's dealing with the lunar science, okay? Waning is akin to dismemberment, right? Which is done by Osiris's brother Set, or Typhon. And Typhon, or Set, cuts his brother up into multiple pieces. And in this case, 14 pieces, right? And the waxing of the moon cycle, the waxing, you know, dark to light, is akin to rememberment, okay? Putting it back together, bringing the light back, right? Which is done by Osiris's wife or sister, Isis, who is also Os-Set, okay? A-U-S and then S-E-T. And that's very important, very significant, because it's about understanding that Osiris really is a part of all of these archetypes, all of these Netcher gods and goddesses, okay? So the waxing angles from dark to light are the pieces that Isis finds. She goes in search for these pieces in order to remember, to reassemble Osiris. Okay? So both Osiris and Isis are associated with the moon and its phases. Okay? And she, Isis, represents the sacred feminine care component. And why is that? Well, it's because, again, she is the one who took it upon herself to go find the pieces, to remember Osiris. She actually does the work to find the information, the fragments, the pieces. Hence, she represents care, which is the input and processing stage of this mystery, you know, the impregnating and pregnant stage of this mystery, okay? This is about sowing seeds in hopes that they sprout and become fruitful, or become the hero, which becomes Horus or Heru, which is the Netcher force, the Netcher god, okay? So the young Horus that eventually becomes Ra, okay? Because Ra means raised spirit, okay? In the summer solstice. Now, I'm just making this point because this is all about understanding eschatology, which means final things, okay? Because it's about going all the way down to the winter solstice, and then there being a rejuvenation or rebirth or resurrection, and then, you know, rising all the way up to spring, all the way up to the summer solstice, okay? So Just as there is a lunar science of final things, like the waning of the moon angles to a new moon, you know, from light to dark, there is also a waning of the solar or sun down to the winter solstice. And this is all about time understood by measurements of these particular cycles. Okay. So the winter solstice is a measurement of the sun in the northern hemisphere being its last and lowest waning degree of the year, which is right at the end of Sagittarius into Capricorn. Okay, so the house of Sagittarius is the last, during the last month of the year, okay, which is December, okay, the 21st. And then Capricorn starts right after that, okay? And then, you know, of course, for 3 days that follow, the sun apparently stays stationary at the same degree, being the 22nd, the 23rd, and the 24th of December. Then on the 25th of December, the sun rises 1 degree. And if we're being true to nature and the cycles, then the 25th really is the day that the seed sprouts of the sun. The sun is the seed that has been planted, that has been sown, and it is starting to grow. Okay, so you can look at this as birth, okay? But it's a little bit more complex than that. And I'm going to really get into this science as I move forward, okay? So just look at it in the sense of alchemy, okay? That there's a seed that has been sprouted on the 25th, okay? And it's going to grow, and it's going to eventually really birth, okay? And we're going to really get into this as we move forward. So just really contemplate on what I'm saying. Just hold that thought and really think about it, but allow me to really demonstrate what this truly means. And believe me, this Osiris ritual, it will really help us understand this date and cycle, especially when understanding the orientation of the Earth brain hemispheres, okay? And I'm not going to get into that on this show, but I am going to make mention of it just so you have an understanding of where I'm coming from. So this is why Christmas is Xmas, okay? The X is sacred. It's the sacred death and sacred rebirth, or reseeding, if you want to look at it that way. It's like an on and off switch, like I was talking about earlier. You know, lights out or down, like the sun, and also lights on or up, like the sun. Okay, so think about that. In the day sky, you know, in a full day cycle or a full annual cycle. So X, you know, like I said in the last show, X means Christ in Greek, right? And, you know, it's dealing with the Kairu symbol, okay? But as a symbol of pure form, it is much more ancient than that, because it means Osiris and his family, which represent the five epigominal days, the five sacred holy days, or the five extra days of an annual cycle, you know, the days out of time. And there's the key word for this whole show, which is time, okay? So if we're truly paying attention and giving our time, then we will definitely notice a spiritual correspondence to man's material agendas associated with this X symbol, especially something I've already covered in the last episode. So last year was the 23, which is the 5, and now we are in the year 24, which is the 6. So both 5 and 6 have the relation to the X symbol, right? Five is associated with the X symbol as a pure form symbol. You know, there's the 5 points of the X, right? And this is what signifies the pure form essence. And 24 is the numerical value of X, right? And so 2 + 4 = 6. So you have the 5 and the 6, okay? Now, think about this. What number name is the only one with an X stored within it? It's the 6, right? The name of the number 6. You have the S-I-X, right? So 6 is the only number with an X within it, stored within it. So that means the name essentially preserves the X symbol. But the more important reason for X being associated with 6 is because the letter X is numerically the 24th letter in the alphabet. So 24 is reduced to what? It's reduced to 6. So this year is the year of 24. It's the year of the X as well. So last year was associated with the X, and so is this year. And this is only if we're staying true to the Gregorian calendar and the timeline, of course. And regardless of whether anyone thinks the Gregorian calendar is off or incorrect or man-made, which it is, the symbol, the letter X, is really, really gaining a high charge right now. It's really building up a high charge with lots of attention and what is and has become associated with it. Okay, so any claim, something I talked about in the last show, any claim over this symbol or anyone who wields this symbol with any type of material ambition and man's law that is associated with that material ambition, because that's really inevitable, then what happens is this symbol is gaining power as a proxy for the Most High, the inversion of the Most High, because that's what it's all about. That's what it's always been about, the claim to the Most High by inverting the truth from nature. Okay, inverting nature. It defines the center spiritually, but it can and is being used as a proxy to wield power over people's minds, especially if they're ignorant to this symbol and what is associated with this symbol. Now, what other number reduces to the number 6? Think about this. The number of Hiram Abiff. What is that number? 555. 555 is reduced to the number 6. And 555 corresponds to the bird's eye view of the three great pyramids, the three X's, right? The triple X. Okay? So really think about that, because we have to understand how this is all connected. So 6 is also the number of man as well, but incomplete. Now, think about how much we have been fed or indoctrinated with the idea of 666 being so evil and so sinister, okay? Which we have to really understand the reason behind this, okay? But think about all that I said about the negative that is associated with this triple X, you know, especially dealing with porn or with alcohol, anything that is enticing, okay? Something that keeps you out, but if you're curious and you're brave, you'll go into it, right? Or you'll feel brave and you'll go into these things, okay? Because it's about telling you stay out. You know, the X is telling you to stay out, but it's like, but also it's saying subconsciously, come on in, you know, try it out. You know, don't be a pussy. Don't be scared. Come on in. You know, come see what this is about. It's the same thing with the 666. You know, that's why a lot of atheists who are rebellious, they turn to this 666, or anybody who's rebellious to, you know, Christianity or Catholicism. They become rebellious and they look at that 666 as a rebellion number because it's enticing. It's saying, stay out, you know, stay away. I'm in opposition to, you know, Catholicism and Christianity, stay away. But then people who are a little bit brave, they'll go into it with this rebellious attitude and then they will get stuck in it. Okay. They'll get stuck with this, this number, not realizing that they are giving it a charge of sinister rebellion, rather than looking further into it and realizing that it's just been covered up and forgotten about regarding what it really, really deeply means. Okay, so hopefully you're following along with what I'm saying, because it is very important, because it's all about keeping you and everybody else ignorant of the triple X as the bird's eye view of the three great pyramids, which is all about understanding the self, okay? All about understanding the self bridged now back into antiquity to understand your origins. And I'm telling you, it is, like I said in the beginning of the show, it is the order of the day, okay? So you have to get past all the mind control to really start to see and understand what it is that I'm saying. Here with this X symbol and this triple X and the triple six, okay? So the reason that this type of mind control is taking place, I think it's very obvious. It's to keep us dumbed down to where we won't look further into ourselves. So we'll never know who we truly are, and we'll never get out of this slavery that's taking place. You know, it's so you won't find out who you really deeply are at your core and what is truly going on in this world by means of understanding the ancient Egyptian sciences through the pyramids. You know, we're not wanted to understand this particular science because we have to understand disorientation, which is a key factor to methodically layered mind control of this world. Okay. It's keeping us from knowing, which keeps us disoriented, okay? So the more we stay ignorant, the more disoriented we are, and therefore the more disoriented we will become. But ultimately, it's really, what it really comes down to is it is each one of our responsibilities to orient ourselves to nature and natural law the best that we can, okay? And this science is what was preserved in the ancient Egyptian goddess Ma'at. And Ma'at means that which is straight, which means correct, which means right, which means true. Okay? So becoming aware of the triple X and, you know, just the X or the six or the five, and what they really mean in pure form is about correcting one's orientation and attaining and maintaining a true ashlar with straight lines and level foundations. And it's not just those symbols and it's not just those numbers. I mean, those numbers are symbols, okay? But it's not about just those particular symbols. We have to become aware, we have to become literate of all these important symbols to really become more oriented, okay? Because it's all about equilibrium, and that's what it's ultimately about, because equilibrium is all about sovereignty, which is the complete resistance to any type of authority of man, okay? So it's all about the continuation of squaring one's own square, okay? Now think about the three crosses on Calvary's hill or Golgotha. you know, the place of the skull, something I talked about in the second degree. So those three crosses on the hill, on Calvary's Hill or Golgotha, correspond to the triple X, okay? And it is my contention that the triple X comes way before the triple T as a triune symbol, but they're one and the same when you really understand what where they really come from. But they are both 5 points and both are sacred double-headed axes, okay? When you really understand those symbols, okay? And together, when you overlap the X over top of the cross, what you get is 9 points, okay? So you have the 8 outer points, and you have the middle raised point, which is the 9th point, okay? And this is very, very important to understanding the North Great Pyramid, or what's called just the Great Pyramid, okay? It's the Northern Great Pyramid of the three Great Pyramids of Giza, right? So 9 points represents completion of the Benben stone or capstone of the Ashlar, which is a pyramid on a cube, okay? And that's one way to understand it. But the real name that is associated with this is actually called the Broached Thurnal. And I'm going to talk about this here in a second, but it's about understanding that that 9th point in this form is spirit. Spirit is the quintessence, which is the middle point of the X symbol. But as a 3D pyramid on a cube ashlar, okay, the middle point on top that is raised, it's the 9th point. It's the spirit raised in the 3D plane, okay? So this is what's represented. Like what I just said, it's something that's not really well known or not really talked about much, which is this broached thurnal, which is a cube or an ashlar combined with a pyramid on top. Okay, just a pyramid, not with the concave points in the middle between the outer points. Okay, just with a pyramid. So a pyramid only has 4 points at the bottom and then 1 point in the middle raised. Okay, that's 5 points. Okay, but the North Pyramid has, it's really not a true pyramid when you really think about it as a shape. Okay, because it has those concave lines in it where you get the extra points, the 4 extra points. Okay. So there's the, you know, 8 points of the cube or ashlar, and then with that pyramid on top, you have the point raised in the middle, and that point is the 9th point, which is the spire, okay? The spire. Anytime there's a point on top of a building structure, like a pyramid or on top of a cathedral or something like that, the point is a spire. So anything going towards a point is a spire. And a lot of times you'll see the broached thurnal have a axe, which is going through the spire part, the point of the pyramid on top of the cube, okay? It's splitting it just a little bit. But this is akin to, it really ties in the idea of Thor and King Arthur. Okay, King Arthur is about pulling the sword from the stone because it's about you, the individual, taking on the great work, you know, picking up the sword of truth. And the hammer is only able to be picked up by Thor, but if you can charge yourself with the power of Thor, you can pick up that hammer, because that hammer represents truth. And it's heavy. It's a heavy load. That's why it's so heavy. That's why not many people can pull that sword out from the stone, because it's always been up to you. the individual, right? You're the only one who can do the work for you. Nobody else can do the work for you. Nobody else can pick up that sword of work for you. Nobody can pick up that hammer of work for you. Only you can do that. So the broached thernal with the axe in the middle, or at the through the spire at the top, is all about you being the one who picks up that axe. Okay? And it's a lot, there's a lot more to this, and I'm not going to go further into it. I didn't even think I was going to go this far into it here on this show, but I think it's important to understand the 9 points of the Northern Pyramid is associated with this broached thernal, okay, because they correspond. And it's also the Northern Pyramid. Now, the Southern Pyramid, the Middle Pyramid doesn't have any concave lines that I've ever seen, but the Southern Pyramid does seem to have a line or two, and I could be wrong about that. Okay, it's very, very difficult to tell, but the Northern Pyramid definitely has the lines, the concave lines indicating 9 points, okay, which corresponds to the broach thernal, which corresponds to true north, okay? That point, that spire on top, is all about true north because it's about the number 9 being the 9 of completion, or the number of completion. Okay, so that axe in the spire is also related to the 7 stars of the northern circumpolar constellation of the Little Bear, which is 7 stars, including Polaris. Okay, and so it's about understanding the southern hemisphere as the cube being, truing your ashlar to the point of growing out of the darkness, which is all about understanding Egypt as Kemet, which is the black land, but that is associated with the ashlar, which is associated with the south, which is associated with alchemy, because chem is alchemical, right? So you're starting in darkness and working your way out of the dark into light, which is the northern part of the hemisphere of Earth. And that is pointing to the northern circumpolar constellation of the Little Bear. Okay, and this is very deep, and it's something that I explained without the broached thernal in my newest Earth Brain 2 presentation. And I definitely will explain this a lot further as we go. So if you're confused, I apologize, but I definitely will try to explain this so much further once I get to that information. But of course, if you're the serious student, you're going to go watch that presentation and you're going to take a lot of notes and you'll see for yourself what I'm really talking about here. Okay. Now, I just wanted to make mention of a few things that we can see that correspond to Osiris and this X symbol a lot further, okay? I actually went bowling the other day and was quickly reminded of the shape and color of the bowling pins and how many of the bowling pins there are on the lanes. And, you know, this is something I thought about a long time ago, but now that I'm going through this work, I'm really starting to see it. And, you know, if we look at Osiris's crown, which is called a hedjet, so that's spelled H-E-D-J-E-T, hedjet, okay? It's white, okay? This hedjet crown is white. You know, it's bowling pin like, you know, it's akin to a bowling pin, okay, the same shape. And then there is 10 of the pins, which is very, very interesting, especially because they are in the formation of the Tetractys symbol, you know, the symbol with the Hebrew symbols, and there's 10 of them, right, that make this Tetractys symbol. There's 4 rows that make 10 Hebrew symbols. And if anybody has truly decoded anything of the Tetractus, they know that you'll find a cube, a three-dimensional cube in the middle of the center, the central number being the number 5, okay? And that's not something to ignore, okay, with the Tetractus and that 5 associated with the middle number in the cube dealing with Osiris, okay? So it's all tied together, but we have to stay true to these numbers and get back to pure forms, because there's a lot of ambiguity and there's a lot of misinformation or information that's misleading. And this is something that I explained before about, you know, 10 is not really we have to understand 10, but we have to understand it is not really it's not getting back to pure forms, okay? Because the G in the middle of the square and compasses is associated with the number 10, but really when you understand what that G really represents, you know that it's about the pure form of the 7, getting back to the 7, the 3 over the 4, the triangle over the square. But just remember, when you're going bowling, you're using 3 fingers, okay? 2 fingers and a thumb, right? You're taking a ball. Think about the ball. Think about bale. Think about ball. Think about, you can look at it as a celestial orb, like the sun or the moon, as a correspondence to this bowling ball. And if you're rolling the ball down the lane, it's like the waning angles of the sun going down, or the moon angles going from a full moon to a dark moon, right? Or, you know, it's the waning angles to ritualistically dismember Osiris, right? Because you look at all those bowling pins as the Tetractus, or you can look at them as, it's the triangle that gets broken up, right? It's the 10 that gets broken up, and Osiris is scattered all over the place, right? So it's not only knocking his head down, which is a form of dismemberment, but it's symbolically chopping him to pieces, right? So, and, you know, in this case, it would be 10, right? And that's, you know, if you get a strike. So think about this. What happens when you get a strike? What's the symbol that you're given when you get a strike? It's an X, right? And of course, that subconsciously tells the mind that X must be associated with what? 10, because it's a Roman numeral. Think about that. And this is what I talked about on the last show. So this is what most people have been taught. Most people have been taught that 10 is associated with X because X is a Roman numeral of 10. And that's part of the subversive mind control dogma in that game, or, you know, what's going on in the whole world. But really, I think it just comes down to pure ignorance. You know, I just don't think that the people back then really knew how significant this number 10 and 5 and X are with each other, okay? And the Tetractus. But maybe they did, and that's how they're holding the mind control. But either way, most people are ignorant of this science. And remember, in the last show, I explained this dogma surrounding the X being a Roman numeral for 10 as the epigominal days, okay? Because remember, I said that somewhere around 2,500 years ago in Rome, it was in the Roman calendar, it was 355 days, okay, of a year cycle. And then there were the 10 extra days, because there's 365 days, but they counted 355 days. Okay, so there was those 10 extra days. And that's the days, those are the epigominal days during that time, the days out of time, Okay, so that's associated with this X symbol. So this really causes a deep dogma, okay, that really sets us back. So we have to really look into this and really understand that Rome is holding this power of this X as the number 10, okay, when really it's the number 5, okay? So that's how they get away with Christ being the X, okay? So it's something that we really need to continue to talk about on this show, or just in general, people need to talk about this because it really is a stigma that is an overlap. It's a solar cult overlap of the X, which is dealing with the stellar, okay? Because it goes all the way back into the stellar cult, the stellar mythos. And we have to understand that the solar cult is holding the information within it as it becomes corrupt. The stellar and the lunar sciences are stored within the solar, okay? And we have to understand how that works, but it's very, very dense, and you just have to understand. It's going to take a lot of work to really understand how this really works, and that's why the tracing boards are so vital to this type of information and seeing how information is stored in these symbols. Now, I'd like to talk about some other weird, interesting correspondences. So you have the dark occult, the dark psychologists of this world who make the programs and run the programs that are installed into the minds of the masses. And they essentially sent out this program earlier this year, 2024, warning everybody that, you know, we have to look out for disease X, or, you know, what's referred to as the pathogen X, you know, the new thing to be worried about and be frightened by, you know, be afraid of the unknown pathogen outbreak, something that hasn't even happened yet. Okay. They want you to be prepared with fear that something else is going to happen, because they know that everybody's still very uneasy and very afraid of what just happened psychologically and emotionally, okay? And in 2017, it was supposed to be a new preparedness program that just so happened to be relevant this year, 2024. And anybody who thinks this is just some coincidence, let me tell you something. The people that run the programs of this world that are installments that go into the minds of the masses, they don't operate from coincidences or accidents. Yes, they do manipulate certain events that take place that aren't under their control or that they didn't start, okay? Never let a good crisis go to waste is what one of those people said publicly. But they are very strategic in the way that they do their dark work. They are masters of numerology. They're masters of gematria. They're masters of wordplay or green language. They're masters of color frequency that's all over the media, the mainstream media especially. They're masters of symbolism. They're masters of psychology. And basically anything that can bypass the minds of the ignorant masses, which they seem to be doing very, very well with ease, because most people seem to have no iota of care whatsoever of what's actually truly being done to us as a collective species. They are having no problem with the way that they are doing their mind control and the way that people are being so obedient and taking, you know, these polarized political sides where they just have a field day with people's minds. You know, they know exactly what they're doing, and it's because people choose to be ignorant. They choose to stay in the dark. You know, think about this. People stay in the dark where they have no idea what is going on in the dark. But then the people who operate in the dark, the dark psychologists of this world, they understand that darkness like the back of their hand. They understand it. They understand what they're doing to people. And that means that they have light. They have a certain type of light. Okay? They have the light to be able to see in the dark and then stay in the dark. Okay? Because they know that people, most people don't care about their, you know, doing their shadow work, their dark work within themselves. They know people don't care about the esoteric, you know, looking inwardly. They know this. And so they just keep on doing what they're doing with all these programs because it's just so easy for them. It's just so easy because people don't care. People have no care. But the way that I look at this so-called disease X message that they have put out this year is, you know, I'm just speculating, but it could be a big exchange of power in our country, in the U.S., or it could also mean that anyone who is raising the spirit of freedom is a dis-ease or a heretic who needs to be exterminated or X'd out, because it's all about the X of canceling, you know, the X of censorship, okay? That's what that means, to X you out because you are a disease to their agenda, to their new rise in power, you know? I don't know. Maybe I'm just speculating and I could be completely wrong, but you know, when you really can see what's happened in the past is actually, you know, now spawning and repeating in this new era, in this new day, in a new form here in the present day, you know. And if you're able to read the ancient symbolism and myths, then I'd say I'm pretty accurate with my assessment, okay? So I'm just saying we really need to take this information more serious in the way that they're using this symbol, this X symbol, is because it works both ways. We have to understand all the ways that it works. It's not just two ways, it's multiple ways. Remember, to multiply, it's about times tables. There's multiple ways. You know, you look at it like there's five different ways that this thing is being used, that this symbol is being used, okay? And we have the power right now, we have the ability right now to charge this symbol with enlightenment, okay? That's what it's about. That's what I'm trying to tell people. It's this X is the treasure. It is something where we need to get to right now. Time is up. You know, think about that. Time is up. We're out of time. We must charge this symbol as, and that's not to be fear-mongering. It's about understanding how the symbol works. You know, right now is the time. The time is up for the old days, okay? Now we're in this new era, this new paradigm. Okay, and we must charge this symbol with literacy. We must charge this symbol with care. We must charge this symbol with an understanding of this spirit. Okay, this the knowledge of the ancient wisdom. We must re-emerge the ancient wisdom so that way we can have a fighting chance, so that way we can become more connected with nature. Because that's what it's about. It's about becoming the astronomer, you know, mastering yourself. By mastering yourself, you don't need any, you don't need to rely on any government. You don't need to rely on anybody else. because you have mastered yourself. You understand the rising of the sun and the rising of the moon and the moon cycles, the solar cycles, the annual cycles, the great year cycles. You know, if you can understand these things, then you don't need to rely on anybody else. You can go out in nature and you don't need anybody else. You just understand how this all works. Okay? It doesn't mean that we need to, you know, isolate ourselves and get away from each other. That's definitely not what I'm saying, but I'm saying that we have the ability to align to this symbol through natural law and understanding the mysteries enough, you know, understanding the sciences enough. And I know it's hard because where are all these pieces of Osiris? And that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to put the pieces back together, trying to build this round table back together, okay? Because the pieces are missing and they need to be reassembled in order to see the bigger picture. And it's very difficult. It is a very difficult journey, but who said it was going to be easy? You know, it's not easy. Now, just to add to the cryptic messages, think about the movie Godzilla X Kong that's coming out in, I believe, in April of this year. Okay? Think about that. April, right? April is when? April is during the time of spring. Okay? It's during the time of Easter. It is a very, very interesting correspondence, or I guess you could say synchronicity in some way, because it is dealing with X, you know, Godzilla and X. I've been watching a lot of Godzilla and King Kong movies lately, just trying to understand the cinematic language, that is, the allegory that is stored within those movies, to really see what is being said about what's really going on in this world. And it is very, very much on point in a lot of ways, okay? So this new Godzilla X Kong with the subtitle, The New Empire, okay? Think about what I just said with this exchange of power, or this new empire that's being built in our country, in the U.S., or in the whole world. You know, the new world order, or the new, what's it called? The Great Reset. You know, it's all about that. If we know how to read the cinematic languages, we can actually see the bigger picture. Okay. And, you know, we have to remember that these people who make these movies, they could be light workers or they could be dark workers. In most cases, they definitely are dark workers, okay? But either way, you can still see where, if you're symbol literate and you understand allegory, you can still see where things are going to some degree, okay? But anyway, last year, there was the Fast and Furious X, okay, which means Fast and Furious 10, because that's what we are always associating X with. And then the year before that, there was the movie X that I talked about on the last show, which has the dismemberment scene, okay, and that's dealing with the ritual of Osiris. And so what is the deal with this X? Okay, really think about it. If you already watched the last, or listen to the last episode, I think you kind of have an idea by now what this X is implying, okay? Think about the big psyop that took place 10 years ago with Nibiru, or what's known as Planet X. This, you know, this was just a way to get many of the naive New Agers to believe, you know, some off-world savior was coming towards Earth to, I guess, save the world and give people a place, a new place to live or something like that. And this took place over a decade ago, okay? But it worked enough to get people thinking outwardly about a possible inhabitable planet and possible other off-world beings, okay? And think about what Planet X is now, okay? Truly, it's Mars, right? Well, at least that's what SpaceX claims to be the planet to colonize, right? It's about colonizing, which I think is just such a silly idea. You know, it's just like, you're going to go colonize another planet. What? Just so we can, you know, make the same mistakes and never fix what's going on here? You know, it doesn't make any sense. You know, people want to always look outwardly, but not inwardly. Because it's so much easier to look outwardly. And a lot of people would argue that's not true. And maybe it isn't to some degree. But the truth is, either way, we're not going to make any progress by going and colonizing another planet. It will never work. If we can't fix things here, it will never work somewhere else. Okay? Because we're human and we will go make the same mistakes somewhere else until we learn to fix our mistakes, until we learn to understand that natural law is the solution and slavery is not a solution. Okay? So it's interesting that Nibiru translates to crossing or point of transition. Think about that. Point of transition, because X is a symbol of transition. You know, days out of time to days of time. So it's a symbol of dark to light, or it's a symbol of final things, which corresponds to the five epigonal days. Okay? So really think about that, because maybe that's what it's about. I don't know. But the point is, a lot of people fell for that. And I think they are probably still falling for it. They're still hoping that Nibiru is just going to show up and save everybody with a whole bunch of big, you know, off-world giants or something. I don't know. And, you know, hey, I'm not dismissing whether there are any off-world beings or giants or anything like that. I just think that a lot of people are very dishonest. I've looked into Nibiru, you know, I looked into it. There's so many holes in that whole theory and that whole psyop. That's why it's a psyop. Okay. I'm not saying that there aren't any, you know, other places that are habitable for human beings. I'm not saying that there isn't any off-world UFOs. I would never say such a thing. I don't claim any of that. But what I do see is there's a bunch of crap that people fall for and buy into because they are not honest in their research. They don't go far enough in their research to really see that there is something more to this. You know, they don't go far enough in their research to see how many times that a psyop just pops up out of nowhere. And it, you know, it's like catching a whole bunch of fish in a net. And then, you know, where are you going to go from there? You know, you got to find out more information about these things. And you got to know that there are secret programs that are put out as psyops to get people to fall for things so they fall off the track or so they fall off the path, you know, so that way they don't go looking into the things. See, psyops, people don't understand. Psyops are created to divert you from the truth, period. Okay? So that means, yeah, we got to look into these things, but don't fall for them. Don't just take your time when something new comes up. Yes, we are human, and yes, we make mistakes, and we look into things too far, and we can fall for things. We've all done it to some degree. But we have to stay true and go further. There's always something further, because truth is not something you just arrive at completely. It's something that you go after your whole life. It's a lifelong process. It's part of the journey to discover truth, to discover the light, to discover the self, you know, to put these pieces back together, back to a pure form, okay? And, you know, speaking of SpaceX and this whole X corporation, you know, think about Neuralink. You know, it's a way to be a wireless, phoneless, basically a literal cyborg, right? But Neuralink is X. Okay, let's be very clear about that. It is X. It is part of this whole X corporation. And as I've stated, X is an on and off switch. So think about that with this Neuralink. Now, obviously, it's still new and it's more for people who are disabled, okay, now. But believe me, this type of technology people will want eventually. People will want to have this technology in their head because people are lazy. Human beings are lazy. Let's just be real. They will want any technology that makes their life so much easier because life is hard, right? But of course, that comes with a lot of issues. And if you haven't seen Elysium with Matt Damon, that movie is, I mean, it's right on point with this whole Neuralink technology. And it's also a way to help us see that, you know, these off-world beings have this space station where everybody on Earth is dirty, you know, and they're the only ones that are clean. And basically everybody on Earth is their slave and they have to have these slave jobs. And it's just, it's a very interesting allegory, but it is really what's taking place on Earth, period. And that's not me being closed-minded. It really is taking place here on Earth. If you want to say that that really is taking place in outer space with people living in outer space and controlling the Earth, fine. I don't really take that position. I think that, you know, they don't need to do that. I mean, there's so many beautiful places on this planet to live without all the people, and you can control them from far away. You don't need to go live on some other planet or space station. There's plenty of room on Earth. And, you know, another psyop is this whole idea that there's too many people on this planet. I mean, it's just unreal, the kind of things that people fall for. But anyway, the point is, you know, with this Elysium movie, it really is revealing this Neuralink technology in its own way, okay? It is a really interesting movie, and it definitely has a very deep allegory within it. And also, I forgot to mention that I saw the new Godzilla Minus One, and it was really, really interesting. I would say that I really liked it, but also it's not a style movie that I'm really into, but I like the fact that they took it back to a black and white type of film because that kind of adds to the mystery and it kind of adds to the magic of the allegory a little bit better. And, you know, and that's why I like the Twilight Zone series. And, but anyway, I'm not going to break down this Godzilla Minus One allegory, but for anyone who has truly taken any notes regarding the Kamishan Holy Trinity, that the science behind that, that I broke down, and also the science of the triune brain and the allegory of the widow's son, you will definitely see the allegory in that movie, plain as day. You know, it is very, very well done the way that they pulled that off. And it's the whole ritual of Osiris. And I'm not really giving anything away, because I know most people don't understand the ritual of Osiris, but I'm telling you, if you really want to understand the ritual of Osiris in film, there's a lot of movies that use this ritual, but the newest one that I've seen is the Godzilla minus one. Just think about that. Okay. And I think a lot of people know that Godzilla is akin to the power of natural law to some degree. Okay. So it's very, very, very important to pay attention to cinematic language, because, man, you will find so much within these movies if you're studying them with the intent of breaking down the allegory and really seeing how far the information goes. Now, the topic that I'd like to cover for the rest of this show is time. Okay, so if you've made it this far and you're giving your time and your attention, then you will be in for something so much more valuable, and I really, really assure you it'll be worth your time. And the way we have to go about this is seeing how time is measured through allegory and through myth and through symbols, okay? Eschatology is all about time, and more importantly, the end of time, okay? So that's what this is all going to lead to, is the eschatology, something I've talked about many times, but eventually in the next few shows, I'm going to really break down this science of this concept. So we're in the year 2024, right? And 24 is all about what? It's about time. At least, you know, the measurement of time during a day of 24 hours, okay? So this year is all about time. Time is the thing that we say is against us, right? Time is of the essence. And time is controlled by the dominators of the world, of this planet, through the calendars and through religion and through our clocks. Okay? So that's why it is very important to get out of, to break free from this, from the chains of these time enslavers. Okay? It is what most people cling to from a place of fear, you know, not having enough time or wasting time. Okay? And it's built into us. You know, we see that people die, right? So we know that our time is going to be up, or that our time is eventually going to be out physically. Okay? But we have to understand that we can control ourselves internally to not waste any time, okay? Or we can be controlled by time, right? Time is controlled through fear. So 24 is a major number to pay attention to. And as I've stated before, X is the 24th number in the alphabet. So this is also a year of X, especially as a numerical value in the alphabet. So last year was the 5 as the 2 plus 3, and then this year is the 24. 24 is the cosmic number. 12 times 2 is 24, okay? So think in terms of 24 and X as time. It's the age of time. And think about time exposed, or time that is up, or time that is out. Okay? So now we're going to go to the next slide. The next slide is the 24-inch gauge. So 24 is the number of the measuring gauge in Freemasonry, okay, in the craft, okay? So it's the 24-inch gauge. So this is the year of measurement of time during a day cycle. So everybody measures their time a certain way, right? Yet good measurement is a spiritual measurement, truly, okay? So a spiritual measurement of a day is 8 hours of work and livelihood. You know, the way that we support ourselves and, you know, the labor to have shelter and to have food and to have warmth and all the necessities of the livelihood that we have, okay, as being a human being, okay? And 8 hours that follows that would be of sleeping and eating and drinking. So getting plenty of rest and nutrients and hydration, right? And then there's 8 hours of study regarding the self by doing the necessary shadow work and research and contemplation about the way things actually are in the world or in the self. Okay? So it's all spiritual, which comes with discipline and responsibility. It's about self-mastery of time. Okay? Time management. Time management is all about self-mastery. Okay, so 24 divided by 3 is 8, and 3 is spiritual, something I've talked about quite a bit, which is understood through a triangulation perspective, to see how it all adds up, okay, to see how it all unfolds, okay? So this year, this is that year, the 24, so if aligned to this 24, this year of time with diligence and tenacious responsibility of, you know, time management, this whole year can truly resonate with this number and this letter X symbol. Okay, so the number 24 and the X. Okay, so time management of everything that I just said, you know, work and livelihood, sleep, eat, drink, shadow work, research. If you can do all these things in 24 hours every day, and obviously this is very difficult. It's very, you have to be very dedicated to doing this. There's a lot of sacrifice that is involved. But if you can do it, you can really charge this X symbol. That's what I'm trying to help people understand. Become conscious and become more responsible with time management, okay? So we're going to go to the spiritual currency versus material currency slide, okay? So the serious student will devote their most sacred attention, their absolute attention to the unfoldment of truth. They will recognize the dire importance of sacrificing their you know, lower desires to what is actually important, okay? And, you know, and what is that? Well, it's many things. It's, you know, taking notes. Right? Taking notes, whether that be with a pencil, writing in your notebook, or writing it, typing it in your phone, in your notes, or, you know, voice texting into your notes, and taking the time when you hear something that actually has value, taking the time and putting that attention and time into note-taking. Note-taking is so vital to spiritual currency, okay? Because it is how you learn. This is part of the trivium process of the input or the grammar or the knowledge. They're all three simultaneously really the same. They're synonymous. So it's about the input of grammar, the input of knowledge. You know, taking the time to structure your notes as well. And of course, you know, whatever notes you're taking, make sure it's right knowledge, because there really is right knowledge. You know, right knowledge is knowledge that is all about helping you get closer to truth. Right knowledge is all about understanding that we're trying to go in the direction of freedom, to be sovereign. That's right knowledge. Anything to do with natural law is right knowledge. Anything to do with mind control is right knowledge, because it's finding out what's going on within, you know, what's taking place in the world. That's right knowledge. You know, right knowledge is about helping you in your shadow work. Right knowledge is about helping you with understanding who you truly are. Okay, so note taking is very important to that process of finding the right knowledge. And, you know, practicing the art of rhetoric from what is actually wrote down and learned. Because as you write information down and you contemplate on it, you come to some kind of understanding of it, putting it into rhetoric, you're going to come to an even deeper understanding of that information. You know, so speaking, you know, making the time to speak about the things that you learn, the things that you write down, okay? Making the time, right? With the intent of, you know, sharpening your skill set as a content creator is also part of your rhetoric, okay? That's the wisdom aspect of the trivium, of the esoteric trivium. Rhetoric is the classic third part of the trivium, okay? Because it's about putting the information out, taking the time to create the content, to be able to put content out for others to hear by sharpening your skill set of how, you know, that the rhetoric is the how to put the information out. How are you doing that? Are you doing it through podcasts? Are you doing it through video casts? Are you doing it through presentations? Are you doing it through large crowds of people? Are you doing it through books? Are you doing it through art? You know, how are you, you know, getting this information out? How are you making the time to do that if you have the knowledge? And let's face it, if someone is not a content creator, whether that be through books or art or podcasts or presentations or even, you know, documentaries or interviews or some kind of content expression, when they actually do have important knowledge regarding natural law and the human condition, then that type of person is definitely letting slavery expand and become large and continuously growing, you know, heavily raining down in this world. Someone who behaves this way is not truly spiritual. They don't truly understand spiritual currencies at all. Because if they truly did, they wouldn't stay quiet with what they know and what they understand. And I'm not sure how anyone can, you know, stay quiet about what's truly going on in this world, you know. But I guess there really is truth to the saying, to know and not to act is not to know. And that's so true. To know and not to act is truly not to know. You know, most people that I've met, they never try to give themselves any real time or any real work on their shadow or their own, you know, being. They just run away in their hedonism. You know, they run away to their job. They spend hours and hours and hours, extra hours, just to somehow justify their reason for being away from their own soul. And it's, you know, it's just all about running away to their fantasy worlds, worlds of make-believe, to just, you know, kill time until it's all over, until this whole life is over, you know, because that's how much they really just don't want anything to do with themselves, truly. Even people who show signs of awakening, okay, that I've seen in my life, okay, not everybody, but some people who have shown signs of awakening, most of them just quickly run back to their comforts, their creature comforts, you know, run back to their quote unquote friends, people who completely believe everything that's going on in this world through the media, you know. So they go back to their comfort crowds, their comfort friends, just, you know, essentially going along to get along no matter what immoral behavior there is. And they essentially act like nothing bad is really taking place in this world. You know, just right back to, you know, new age, good feel, comfy fantasies, just all material pleasures, and completely ignoring all the wonders, all the riches that they could truly have with spiritual currencies. Just ignoring all the time that they could make and all the attention that they could pay with spiritual currencies, you know, learning who they truly are, which is truly gold when you really understand what that really means. But of course, you know, when you're in a cage and you don't know you're in a cage, it becomes very difficult to get out of that cage. And that's what, you know, being in the box or the coffin is about. Spiritual currency is what makes you raise out of that coffin. Spiritual currency is what gives you a chance to raise out of that coffin of darkness and death. So time is what materialists mentally use to gauge things like money amounts and payment amounts. And the materialist also says things like time is money. Think about that. Time is money. That's like saying money is time. And this type of person is operating from the R complex, the lowest operating part of the triune brain system. Okay, the reptile brain, the fight or flight brain, the oldest part of the brain. Okay? And when this part of the brain governs the whole brain, when it's dominating the neocortex, the upper part of the brain, the newer part of the brain, then the belief system will hang on to what only, you know, the five senses can handle or make sense of. And it can't go any further. It's an ego-dominating behavior that sees that any time used that's not making money or, you know, not drinking or not drinking a lot of alcohol and having a lot of fun doing that or having sex, you know, just for lower desires just for the physical feels, or just playing endless video games or board games or watching tons of movies or having nothing but endless pleasure and fun, is essentially a waste of time to a materialist. Okay? It's a waste of time if you're not doing those things. That's how materialists think, generally. Okay? And again, I'm saying I'm not against any of those things that I just mentioned. It is the abusive behavior of those things that people think is not wasting time, but really it is. Okay? Because anything other than those things that I mentioned are a waste of time to materialists. And people are blown away when they find out that I do what I do on here and don't make any money at it. They can't believe it, you know? And they show no signs of understanding it or even wanting to understand what I do on here. You know, most people, when they hear that I have this podcast or my other outcasting podcast, the only thing that really comes to their mind is, you know, are you popular or are you making money? You know, is there a lot of people listening to it? And that's really all people are concerned with. It's not about the content to them. They only really want to know your financial status, really, on anything. That's what materialism is wanting to know financial status, okay? And I hear people all the time asking, you know, what do you do for a living? Is what you do on the podcast for your living? And if I say no, they just cannot believe it. They just don't understand that someone would actually sacrifice their well-being, sacrifice their work, their time for other, you know, pleasures. They cannot comprehend that someone would do that to make time to, you know, put something out with some kind of sacrifice. They cannot understand that without money involved, you know? So just look at this. Look at this slide. You have spiritual currency versus material currency. Spiritual currency is about making the time to, you know, really do the things that are necessary to your evolution as a species, okay? And which adds to the collective species, okay? And then paying attention, you know, actually paying attention to what is actually going on in the world, not just what the news feeds into your brain or not just what the school indoctrinates into you. It's about paying attention to what is actually going on and making the time to actually study what is truly taking place within yourself and what's going on in this world. Okay? It takes sacrifice. And then the material currency is about making money and paying bills. Okay, where the mind is only concerned with spending money or making money or paying bills. That's all it can think. This is someone who is residing in their R complex. Someone who is in fight or flight, and that's all they can think about. That is all that they can comprehend because they don't make the time to pay attention. They don't make the time to learn who they truly are and what is really going on and what natural law really is, you know? Because if you really made the time and paid the attention, using your spiritual currencies to understand what law really is in nature, the law that governs the consequences of human behavior, you would definitely not care for making money or paying bills or spending money, okay? You wouldn't care as much for that. You would actually start to care for your sovereignty. You would actually start to care for your rights. You would actually start to care for the evolution of the species if you made the time. So it's about time management. You know, the true spiritual currencies, okay? Because it's about spending the right amount of time and paying the right and correct amount of attention, okay? Spending at least 8 hours a day on the self, and I know that's very difficult for a lot of people, but you have to sacrifice, you know, spend the time with silence. Spend the time on the shadow self. Spend the time with, you know, spend some time out in the physical nature. A lot of people don't do that anymore. Spend the time reading and writing about the self. Spend time contemplating on what you read and what you're writing. Spend time taking lots of notes. Spend time with others who actually want to know what's going on in this world, or at least show some kind of sign that want to know certain things. And by educating them and learning from them, you know, because it's about the real things that we should be paying attention to, not what we're fed by entertainment and the news. You know, it's about spending time also speaking in front of crowds and practicing the art of presenting your work, the art of rhetoric, you know, how you put your information out and making the time to do so. These are all spiritual currencies that help generate care for truth and freedom. These currencies will make you spiritually rich and see your self-worth, your value as a sovereign human being. So we must pay attention to our time and use it wisely and use it correctly as much as we can. You know, I understand life is hard. Life is difficult. But you're not here to be a slave. None of us are. We're here to be sovereign human beings. We're here to learn as well. This is the university. The universe is the university. We're here to learn. And it takes time. It takes attention. We can't let material currency get in the way of that, or we'll go all the way to our grave with things that we can't take with us. Spiritual currency goes with us. Material currency stays here on earth in the physical domain. Also, think about the timeline, which helps us understand history better. So it's important to spend time building a timeline to make sense of cycles and ideas through time. That is very, very important to do. You know, that's something that I've been doing in my notes, is making a timeline. You know, in my digital notes, I'm making a timeline so I can really understand the ideas and really understand the cycles, and therefore I can become more sovereign. I don't need someone else telling me what to believe when I have done the research myself. Okay? So, let's go to the next slide with the quote from Albert Churchward. And Albert Churchward says, a man who clings to sensuals. And sensuals are, you know, like lower sexual pleasures, right? It's a lower frequency of pleasures. They cannot associate with spirituals because, you know, spirituals are higher than those lower pleasures. A man who relies only on his common sense, on his money-getting power, materialism, or on his mere energy after good dinners will never reach the higher and spiritual planes, which, however, are not less real because they are unseen as such. If we want the truth, we must labor for it quite as hard as we labor for gold. So if truth is really what someone is after, then the lower part of the self has to be mastered. Okay? The lower part of the ego, material self, can't rule over the higher part, the higher self. Okay? The R complex can't rule over the neocortex. And the laboring for gold in this context is, this is about laboring as a material ambition, which isn't wrong as long as it's not your master, okay? Which is material, again, material over the spiritual, okay? Now, let's go to the slide that says Master Mason. Now I'm going to attempt to elucidate this very important tracing board that is part of the third degree of esoteric Freemasonry, the Master Mason degree. And this piece is called Time and the Weeping Virgin. Okay. This is a more modern version of an ancient expression of Isis learning that her brother or husband was slain by Set, aka, you know, darkness taking down the sun, okay? In the especially in the fall equinox, okay? Now, I'm not going to break this board down all the way, but I'd like to mention some very important aspects regarding the, especially the middle figures that you see there, the female and the older male, okay? These are archetypes, okay? So we see the female figure who's known as the Weeping Virgin Goddess, and she's with the older male figure standing behind her who is holding her hair, and he's holding also a scythe, which is the big blade with the big handle. And he has really big wings, okay? So this older male archetype is known as Time, or he's also referred to as Kronos, being the god of Saturn. Okay, and that's very, very important to pay attention to. So this is where we get the idea of time flies, okay? And I'm going to break this down further as I go, okay? So the Weeping Virgin is standing on a monument or a gravestone, looking down at what's called the Book of Constitutions on top of a broken column, okay? It's a symbolic book of laws within the craft of Freemasonry, okay? So this Weeping Virgin is akin to Isis or Mother Mary and, you know, a few other virgin goddesses, okay? So she is holding a sprig of acacia in her right hand towards the, it's pointing towards the seven stars, okay? And that's, it's pointing towards the east, okay? So we have to remember that. But it's pointing towards these seven stars. And this symbolizes eternal hope in the resurrection of spirit in the individual or in Hiram Abiff, okay? To be raised towards the Most High, because the seven stars are symbolic of the Most High, okay, which is, you know, this is dealing with the seven stars of the circumpolar constellation of the Little Bear, okay, in the north, the North Pole, okay? But it's also pointing at the moon because the moon is dealing with a 14-day waxing cycle to a full moon, which is all about resurrection. And the acacia is the symbol of hope that the resurrection of the spirit of Hiram Abiff, aka Osiris, will rise once more. Okay? So the acacia is also pointing in the direction of the trowel symbol, or the trowel tool, okay, in the top left corner, which is, it's a symbolic representation of spreading real agape love through preserving knowledge and preserving wisdom of natural law. It represents doing the true great work. That's why this symbol is associated with the great work, because just as a trowel is used to spread and correctly shape cement, you know, think about that word cement. You know, think about it with the green language, you know, cement, you know, shaping correctly, right? It is a symbol associated with spreading knowledge of moral science, of objective right and wrong, and natural law, okay? It's about preserving that type of knowledge, okay? So the virgin goddess holding this the sprig of acacia, this equates to care. It equates to hope of a being who becomes raised to a moral being who has taken in the knowledge of objective morality and has come to a deep understanding of natural law, and who is then figuratively going down the mountain to teach natural law to others, okay? Because it's about spreading that information, okay? It's about preserving that information, okay? So in her left hand, she holds an urn, okay? That's where you keep the ashes of a dead body, right? And this represents the ashes of the older material-based self, okay? The lower self that no longer dominates the brain, but as a reminder of the mortal death as well, okay? Because we all eventually physically die. And it symbolizes also Hiram Abiff's death, of course, okay? So that is very significant, and I really want you to pay attention to the fact that the Virgin Goddess is looking down at the grave. She's looking down at the grave dug out, right? So that's very significant, the dugout, okay? And of course, we see the broken column with the Book of Constitutions on top, okay, with the urn on top of that, okay? And this represents the nearly crumbled foundation, meaning that care and the aligned behavior to natural law has nearly been lost and is barely still alive or still around in this world through knowledge. Or understanding, you know, more importantly. That's why the Weeping Virgin Goddess is weeping with that Book of Constitutions, aka the Book of Nature and Natural Law, because time is running out for the completion of the temple, and care is waiting to be found and resurrected. And this can be further understood by looking at it as she is weeping because the sun has dropped to its lowest degree in the northern hemisphere in the winter solstice. And she is hoping that it will rise again back up to the spring equinox and on up to the summer solstice to replenish the land and bring forth abundance and rejuvenation. Okay? Now, Hiram Abiff is the temple builder that was symbolically struck down to his death as the, you know, column or the pillar that was broken down. Okay, that's what that symbolically represents. So this is about resurrecting true care, or symbolically the resurrection of Hiram Abiff, the spirit, the spirit of the master builder. Okay, this is why she's looking down in the hole with hopes that in time the spirit will rise from the grave and the column will be erected with a solid foundation. Okay, and this is relating to the wisdom pillar in the first degree. Okay, the middle pillar. Okay. And this is also taking place on the third step. Okay, that's what the monument is. The monument really is the third step. So this is about the second birth, a birth from the virgin goddess. Okay, and this is all about the science of the widow's son. Okay. And a broken column doesn't mean it is the end, okay? Because it's about understanding cycles. But it can be the end in the sense that someone doesn't spiritually awaken or someone actually physically dies. But it can be rebuilt. It can be built upon. Or it can remain in decay and essentially just turn to dust. Now, behind the virgin goddess is the god of time, also known as Cronos or Saturn. And standing behind her, this implies that time, patience, and perseverance will accomplish all things. And that's what nature teaches us very well. Nature is the true master teacher. You know, there's a saying by Lao Tzu, who says, nature does not hurry, yet everything is accomplished. So Cronos is the destroyer of all things, and he even devours his own children because time doesn't play favorites. Okay? Time doesn't wait for anyone. And his scythe is an emblem of decay. It's an emblem of death because it chops away at everything in its path. Okay? So he is also holding the goddess's hair, the ringlets of her hair, and he's straightening these ringlets out. And she is still in her youth years, okay? She's a virgin, which is symbolic of, you know, getting ready to possibly birth the light within, which is feminine. It's a processing stage, okay? It's corresponding to the fact that a real virgin is not yet impregnated and therefore cannot give birth. So symbolically, the virgin goddess awaits to be impregnated with the resurrected spirit. So this is all about understanding the virgin goddesses prior to being pregnant. You know, like the virgin Isis and the virgin Mary, okay? And the older male behind her is essentially also showing that you do eventually get old. And that means that you only have a certain amount of time. And that's how we measure our time here on Earth, is because we see older people. When we see older people get old and then die, we understand that is the direction we're going to go as well. to some degree, okay? So it's about understanding that this young female or this young virgin goddess is about the young part of ourselves, the young part of our emotions that has yet to be developed into something more, okay? And of course, you know, this God of time is always right there letting us know that we have to get this temple built. I mean, that's the word temple actually means time, okay? So it's about the time of the temple. How much time do we have to build the temple while we're here on Earth? Well, it's limited. We get a limited amount of time to build this temple and to complete it. Are we ever going to truly complete it? Maybe not, but we have the ability to at least get to, you know, build it as much as we can, discover it as much as we can, because it's all about our internal self. And we only have so much time to really see this temple, to really understand this temple, and to really use this temple the best that we can to do good in this world. Because building the temple truly means you are reuniting with nature. Okay, that's what it's about. It's about reuniting with nature because you're building your temple within to have an understanding of your place in nature, your role in nature. Because it, again, I'm going to keep on saying that it's about getting to the astronomer self. Okay. Of course, with all the knowledge that comes prior to that, that leads up to it, you can't just become an astronomer and then you're free. That's not how it works. But it means that, you know, becoming an astronomer in the steps properly, correctly, in nature, this is what's going to really help us understand the bigger picture, okay? Because becoming an astronomer, you don't have to be spiritual to become an astronomer. But if you're a spiritual astronomer and you actually have the sciences and have the myths and have the understanding of nature and, you know, really have your animistic worldview, then you can really start to see how everything is connected. And when you reach your level of astronomy, or as being an astronomer, then you can have more of an appreciation and your temple will be that much stronger as a result. So it's all about making sure that we understand that we have a limited time to raise up out of that coffin, out of that box, and really put the time and effort into preserving this temple and passing that knowledge on to others so that way they can see the beauty in themselves as well. And there's many ways to go about this. You know, this is the way that I'm arriving at this information. Okay. These are all, everything I'm sharing is instruments. They are tools. They are spiritual tools to help me adjust, or, you know, to help the individual adjust themselves and refine themselves so they have clarity of what's really going on in this world, okay? That's what it's about. Natural law, the knowledge of natural law, it is a constant unfoldment and refinement of the self. That's all it is. Because the more that you align to natural law, the more you really start to see how everything unfolds from it, okay? And everybody's going to get there in their own unique way. And this is the way that I chose. So I think it's a very beautiful and helpful way to go. So let's look at some more of the information in this tracing board. Okay. So, you know, think about this. You know, when we're talking about time, this hourglass is so important to understand because it's akin to not only the hours in a day, but it's also about all the celestial and terrestrial cycles, okay? Because all of the celestial and terrestrial cycles are connected to us. Okay, that's what those two pillars of the second degree are all about, the celestial and the terrestrial. And it's about understanding the time of each one of the cycles that is associated with these two pillars. Okay? So we have to understand our time is limited, and an hourglass is the symbol of that limitation. Okay? So time really is against us, and it's just a natural thing when we really understand what time is, but to not be ruled by time. Okay? We should not be, let time rule us, because when time rules us, we are limiting ourselves from developing into a higher human type. Because if we're living in our R complex, that means that time is ruling over us. And then we'll never, you know, get the temple built. We'll never understand any of this beautiful science within nature. So down at the bottom left, we see this octagonal window. Okay, so there's all these octagonal windows down here in the bottom fence of a frame of this tracing board. Okay, so the bottom left, we see a sword that is piercing the heart. Okay, and what this symbolizes is that the truth is found in the center of things. Okay, it's central. The heart is central, and truth is central. And that's why, you know, the sword is also associated with truth, right? It actually looks like the T, right? When the sword is upside down. But it means, the sword means truth. That's what King Arthur pulling the sword from the stone. It's about pulling that truth out. You know, it's about picking the truth up and going with it, going after the truth, being strong enough to deal with the truth, okay? But understanding that truth is at the center of everything. Truth is the heart. Truth is found in the heart. And then down right beside that, to the right of that octagonal window, we see the sword over the open book, and this is what's called the Book of Constitutions, guarded by the tiller's sword. And this represents defending the law, the capital L law, natural law, or, you know, what is actually true and correct in nature, which is rights, you know, protecting rights. That's what I say at the end of the show. I always say, you know, remember to do no harm and defend truth, because we must defend truth. We must protect the truth once we know it, once we know what it is. And then to the right of that is the three beehives representing industry. And this corresponds to the Great Pyramids. Okay, and I'm not going to go deep into that, but just understand I am going to go really deep into the beehive, okay, and the symbolism of the bees. So that is very, very, very important to understand. And then also to the right of that is the Masonic censer, which is the incense burner, which is symbolic of the spirit raising to the Most High. Or, you know, with the Most High, okay? And there's a lot to that. But it's very interesting, because from the censer rising all the way up to the star with the symbolic handshake, this is very, very powerful, because the handshake, when you see two hands shaking or clasping each other, in Freemasonry, this stands for the spirit shaking the hand or holding the hand of materialism and materialism holding the hand or shaking the spirit. They're in unison, okay? That's what that means. But it also can mean that the spirit is always trying to pull the material up and the spirit is always trying to pull the spirit down. But when they're in harmony, it's a really nice handshake, okay? It's akin to that, right? So right underneath that, we see the 3-4-5 ratio, the Euclid's 47th proposition, or what's known as the Pythagorean theorem. And this is very, very crucial to understanding the triune brain, because it's about understanding Osiris and Isis coming together to create the right angle. And the right angle is the square. Okay, this is where we find the square. And from the square is supported, or what produces, Horus, which is the hero, which is the action principle. So you have Osiris, Isis. So Osiris is associated with the R complex. Isis is associated with the limbic system. And then as a result, when they come together and create the right angle, then there is a right action, which is Horus, the hero. Okay. So down from there on the walls at the right at the beginning of the first step, we see the number 7 above the archway, above the royal arch symbol. And the right beside the 7, I don't know if you can see it, but it says 3/4. So that's indicating triangle on top of the square, okay, in two-dimensional form. And of course, I talked about the broached thermal, which is the cube is the three-dimensional square, and then the pyramid is the three-dimensional triangle, okay? So when they go together, now you have a broached thermal, which is the perfected ashlar, if you want to call it that. And then to the left of that, you see, you know, the three steps going into the temple. And you see the three initiates. You see the child, you see the adult, and then you see the elder. Okay, and this is about the growth of, you know, the entered apprentice, the fellow craft, and then the master mason. And then beside them, you see the other temple on the little wall right there with the number 5, because 5 is in the middle. And this is also relating to the broached thernal, okay? Because it's about finding the center point, okay? The 5 is the central point of an X. And the X is on top of a square or on top of the cube. And then you raise that fifth point. Now you have 9 points because you have the 8 points of the ashlar and then the 5 points of the pyramid. And then, you know, put them together. Again, you have the broached thernal. The point in the middle raised is the 9th point. So there's a lot to this tracing board. And we have to remember that the green acacia is a winter time symbol, right? Because it's evergreen. It's an evergreen. And that is very significant to the winter time because it's about living. It's about something showing signs of living through the winter. And the sun is lowest among the other celestial bodies in this image. And that's very, very significant because it's about the sun going to its lowest degree in the winter, just like going to your lowest degree in your spiritual or your material self right before you have your spiritual awakening. Okay. And on top of that, the sun going to its lowest point is also about seeding the virgin, okay? It's about seeding the virgin. And that is something that I kind of touched on earlier, and I'm going to really explain what I mean by this, okay? So one more thing I wanted to say before I go further is that the Ark ship that we see going in the direction of the sun setting, or the sun at its lowest point, this is about understanding that, well, first of all, what does the Ark ship hold, biblically speaking? It holds animals, right? But not real animals. They're zodiacal animals. They're zoodiacal animals in the ark, in the ship, right? So now we're going to go to the next slide. Okay, the zodiac slide. And I put this together. I called it Time and the Weeping Virgin Goddess, because this is how we're going to really understand this tracing board better. So if you can just see where I placed the Weeping Virgin with the god Kronos or Time behind her with the broken column, just think about where the burial is, the big hole, the big dugout for the coffin, okay? For the box. Think about that. Now think about that abstractly in this image of the zodiac. Okay, so the ark that I just showed you, the ship, is also akin to the arch. So the zodiac arch is also the ark. An arc is half of a circle or cycle. So think about that. Really think about that. It's half of a circle. It's half of a cycle. Okay? So the Ark ship is allegorically holding all the astrological zoo animals within its arch. This is where the real science of the Ark ship with all the animals on it really comes from. Okay? So it's animals within an arch or an ark. It's the arch or ark that was built in order to carry these celestial animals through the deluge or the great flood. But again, through the celestial deluge, okay? And a ship is the shape of a what? It's the shape of an arch. Okay, you can see that down in the bottom left. I overlapped the ark ship on the waters, the below, the waters of the zodiac. And then the rainbow is the arch, the rainbow arch. Okay, because a rainbow is half of a circle. It's an arc, right? So the evergreen acacia is held in the direction of hope that the ark will survive the return of the sun, especially in the solar mythos. So this is all about the solar annual cycle, okay? That is very important to understand. And the deluge is something that we have to understand. A deluge is about a cycle, first and foremost. So we have to understand that it is very important to recognize the annual cycle is dealing with a deluge, but also it is about the stellar mythos that holds the science of a deluge as well, because it's about understanding the northern circumpolar deluge of the precession of the equinoxes, which is referred to as the great year cycle, which is roughly once every 26,000 years. Okay? And this is about the Earth's wobble or obliquity that causes a trek through different northern circumpolar pole stars, okay, every 26,000 years. And that is a very, very important part of understanding this deluge, okay? Because it's celestial. It's a celestial deluge. That's where we really got to understand how important this science is and not take it so literal. Okay? So hopefully that makes sense in people's minds. And, you know, something I better make mention here was there's a stellar Netcher god named Tot, T-A-H-T, who preserved the science of the chronology of the pole shifting within the great year cycle. And he preserved this science in the lunar and solar mythos as a way to restore the great eye when the time was becoming out of alignment with the cycles, okay? Because, you know, the knowledge gets lost. And the eye is the northern circumpolar constellation of the Little Bear, the constellation that never set, especially in the northern hemisphere, okay? So the seven stars that never set is dealing with the Little Bear. So Tot was the measurer of time through measurements of the moon cycle, especially. Okay? So we have to understand that this science has been passed down from the stellar through the lunar and then on into and brought into the solar. Okay? And Tot is also synonymous with Thoth. So very, very important information to understand. And how interesting is it that the number used at the bottom, the downward direction of the modern clock, which is, you know, when you overlap the modern clock over top of the zodiac, think about that, okay? With the 6 at the bottom, 12 at the top, 3 to the right, and 9 to the left. 6 is at the bottom, right? 6 is where the time of the winter solstice begins. That is if we're aligning the zodiac with the modern clock correctly, okay? So look at the lower half of the zodiac as a tomb, okay, or a womb simultaneously. And then you will see, look at the to the right at the autumn equinox with the weeping virgin goddess with time behind her, okay? So Virgo is virgin, okay? That's why you even see the archetype in the green area is a weeping virgin goddess with wings. She actually has wings and she's holding three sticks of wheat of some kind or grains. And the weeping virgin is on the monument with time, okay, behind her. And what this means in the zodiac is when you look at the bottom half of this full circle of this zodiac, which is autumn and winter time, okay? Look at this as the tomb, look at it as a womb, and look at it as darkness, look at it as soil, okay? Think about this. So think about the fact that when the sun is going through the houses, it's going in a clockwise direction on this zodiac in particular. Okay, and that's another thing I want to make mention is that a lot of zodiacs are very, very hard to read because they're not in alignment to the clock and they're not in alignment to the way we really should be looking at it properly. And I think this way of the zodiac is the most proper way to look at it because it corresponds to up and down, dark to light, and it corresponds with understanding that the sun at its highest is right between Gemini and Cancer, And the sun in its lowest is right between Sagittarius and Capricorn. And we really have to understand that paying attention to where the sun is going through the houses is also going through the months. And how we look at this is everything, you know, the orientation, you know, this, remember what I said, disorientation is how we stay ignorant and how we stay and remain enslaved. Okay. So we have to orient ourselves and understand how to align the zodiac properly to the months of the year and to the rising of the sun and also the clocks, because it just helps us orient ourselves. If you're someone who really understands where the sun is, looking at a zodiac that is, you know, out of order and doesn't look like this, you know, good for you. But I think this is going to help you a lot more when you have it aligned in this direction. So what I really want to really make the focus on now is just remember that the sun is also akin to Hiram Abiff and Osiris, and of course, Jesus Christ, okay? So the sun, when it's making its trek through these houses, it's going in a clockwise direction. Well, when it gets to autumn, what happens to life outside? Well, there begins a decay in outside life, right? Trees and bushes and everything starts to lose its green color, except for evergreens, right? So as the sun is trekking down to Virgo, it is about to enter into the autumn equinox, where the sun is about to go under that line of decay. It's about to begin its descent into decay symbolically, because literally all the vegetation is going to start to decay at this time in the fall. So the Libra and Scorpio and Sagittarius are akin to the three murderers of Hiram Abiff. So Jubala, Jubilo, and Jubilum, right? And these three murderers are the ones that are just think of waning angles. Remember, waning is going from light to dark. So it's all about the waning angles of the sun. The lights are dimming. It's getting darker and darker because the sun is going further and further into the southern hemisphere. Okay, because this is dealing with the northern hemisphere, what we're looking at here, okay? And that's very important to stress. So Hiram Abiff is about to be put in his tomb. That's why autumn, is a tomb, right? Because the sun is going into a tomb. So also, there's a correspondence with Scorpio and Set or Typhon, okay? Because Scorpio is associated with Set or Typhon, who dismembers his brother Osiris, okay? So Osiris is also put in a tomb or a casket or, you know, some kind of box where he is put afloat downstream, okay, in a river downstream. So the sun is about to go to its symbolic death, which is in the end of Sagittarius, which is at the winter solstice. Okay, the sun is making its trek down to its lowest point. Now, what we have to remember here is that there is a lot of misunderstandings about the sun being born on the 25th. And I'm going to really try to clear this up with this science on this show, because I definitely was confused by this, but I have done a lot of contemplation and I have really found that there is something so beautiful about this science that we have to also look at. I'm not saying that other people are wrong when they say that there's a birth on the 25th or a birth at spring equinox. I'm not saying that at all. But what I am saying is we have to understand that the sun going to its lowest point in the winter solstice, the sun in its lowest point in the northern hemisphere means that the sun is, because remember, when you're planting a seed, you're sowing a seed in hopes, there's that word hopes, that it will rise, that it will bring fruit, that it will grow, that it will, you know, germinate and sprout and then, you know, grow and grow fruit, right? Whatever that may be. So the sun going to its death and going through those 3 days, the 22nd, the 23rd, 24th, the sun is at a standstill pretty much, you know, from our perspective on Earth. And then on the 25th, we have to understand, look at this as the southern half of the southern hemisphere of Earth is akin to the sacred feminine, okay? So look at the southern hemisphere of Earth as black. And black is associated with the sacred feminine, okay? And it's also associated with spirit, okay? So this is the womb of the planet, okay? The womb. This is spiritually connecting to us as the womb. So the southern hemisphere is corresponding to the right brain of a human being, okay? So this is a womb. So we have to orient ourselves. So that womb is also akin to the northern hemisphere's autumn and winter. Okay? So autumn and winter in the northern hemisphere are directly related as one. Just think of the one shape, the lower half of the zodiac is akin to the lower half of Earth. Okay? So when the sun is at its lowest point, it is a seed that is sown down in the southern hemisphere of Earth. And it sprouts on the 25th. Indicating the birth of a seed. Think about that. The birth of a seed. Okay? So that is the beginning of the seed's journey to, you know, to germinate, you know, go through the houses of Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces. As the sun goes through these houses, this is the germination process of the seed sprouting and going through. Think of the lower half of the zodiac here as soil, okay? So the soil is the southern half of, because remember, Earth is associated with the sacred feminine. So soil is Earth. Earth is the sacred feminine, okay? So that's why you have the inverted, you know, triangle, which is the chalice. Okay, this is dealing with Earth. So as the seed sprouts from in the womb or in the soil at the very bottom, the seed starts to sprout and work its way through the soil and trek all the way up to Aries or the spring equinox, right? And remember, Aries is arise, to arise, the sun is going to arise once it breaks the plane of the, once it makes it to the equator of the earth during the spring equinox of the northern hemisphere. So this is truly, the spring equinox is truly the birthing of the seed into the air. Okay? This is where it breaks the soil. Okay? And this is the idea of the Garden of Eden. You're looking at the Garden of Eden. So you have the soil of the sun, and the sun rising, the seed is rising out of the dark, out of the womb, out of the tomb, okay? Because Hiram Abiff is the seed. Hiram Abiff is the one who is in the tomb. Osiris is in the tomb. Osiris is the seed. You know, and this also goes back to Osiris being the corn god, okay? Because it's about sowing the seeds in hopes that the seed will grow. So the sun starting its birthing, it births on the 25th of December, because truly that is when the sun starts to, that should be the day of the new year. That truly is the day of the new year, when the new year starts, okay, is the 25th, because that is the day that the seed symbolically begins its growth, when it starts to, you know, sprout. You know, it germinates during, really it's germinating in the autumn, and then it sprouts on the 25th and it begins to grow. Okay? It begins to grow all the way up out of the soil, and then make its, it arises in Aries, right? And then what else is held at that time? What other science or myth is held at that time? Well, one of the myths that helps us understand this seed or this child that's in the womb that hasn't broke out into the air yet is the idea or science behind Isis or Mother Mary, who is symbolically full with, you know, full in pregnancy. The moon is full. So the first full moon of the spring equinox is followed up by Easter Sunday, always. It's always been that way. So Easter Sunday, East Star Sunday, is the day, the birth or the resurrection of the sun, okay? So the moon is always dealing with the tomb or the lower world, the spiritual world, the underworld. Okay, so when the moon is full, because remember, it's about waxing angles, the waxing angles of Osiris. When the moon is full, that means there's going to be rejuvenation. That means there's going to be rebirth. That means there's going to be resurrection. Okay, because it's about resurrecting from the tomb. It's all of these things. It's everything I'm saying. They're all simultaneously happening at the same time. So once the sun arises or is born or birthed or resurrected, now it moves through Aries and Taurus, the bull that charges north to the summer solstice, where the sun rises to its northernmost point between Gemini and Cancer, okay? So this is where the being is raised. This is Os-Ra. This is Osiris and Ra combined. This is Hiram Abiff being raised, okay, to the highest. This is the high Ram above, okay? This is all about understanding that there had to be a seed that was planted of, because it's all about alchemy, going from dark to light. That's what it's all about. Okay? So the weeping virgin goddess having time behind her is that in time, the sun will be the hero again, or the sun will be birthed again and bring rejuvenation, to bring green back to the world. The new year, just remember this, the new year being the 20, being at the 25th of December, is solidified and verified because the southern hemisphere is the sacred feminine womb. Okay, that's where it begins. It begins there. You know, the seed begins there. The growth begins at the seed. You know, once the embryo starts to develop, and then the baby is, you know, developed by, you know, that time of the spring equinox, when the baby comes from the waters of space, or, you know, from the womb, the seed, the sun, the baby comes out into air. Okay. So it's about going from earth, the element of earth, into air, but being raised with fire out of the water. You see? So this whole, so, you know, right in the center is spirit. So this whole zodiac is telling you what the elements are, truly. Okay? So we have to really pay attention to that, because it is a very deep sacred science. It's really what's helping us understand the solar mythology, and then that's what's going to help us understand the lunar mythology better, and eventually, hopefully, we start to really start to understand the stellar mythology. But really, this zodiac is all of the mythologies. The whole ancient Egyptian mythos is in this image, okay? But there might be ambiguity, of course, because it's a very old science. But as we start to sharpen ourselves, we'll make the corrections and we will really expose how this thing really magically works and how it aligns in nature truly and correctly. But, you know, one of the things that I wanted to also mention is that down in Capricorn, which is the beginning of the year, this is dealing with Father Time, okay? So this is Kronos. And it's also about, remember what I said, you know, we're going from dark to light. And in when we understand the connection with Saturn to the sun, okay? Because Saturn is the most outer planet that we can see with the naked eye. And so we've always associated this ringed planet known as Saturn as that which goes around and encompasses all other planets, including the sun. Okay? So it encompasses. It is that which keeps and holds the power of time. Okay? And therefore, Saturn has always been associated with the root chakra, which is the lowest, which is associated with darkness. Okay? That doesn't mean evil. Okay? But it can be associated with evil when people stay in that chakra, with when people stay in their base desires. Okay? Because it means darkness. But the point is that in alchemy, we're going from dark to light. So going from, you know, the winter solstice to the summer solstice is an alchemical process. And so this means that the Father Time is, it's about giving us time, but it is a limited amount of time. So Kronos is where we start. We start in Saturn, and we work our way up to the sun, symbolically through the chakra system. Okay? So it's about growing your seed of self, of consciousness. Consciousness is the seed that we're growing, that we're sprouting, that's growing good fruit, hopefully. Because it's about going from your lower animal, you know, because that's why the goat and the fish and the satyr, you know, the half horse, half man are at the bottom, because it's about going from your lowest to your highest. And, you know, it's about mastering that. And, you know, the goat being half of a fish is very interesting, because remember, a fish eats the phallus of Osiris. But, you know, there's a lot to that, and I'm not going to get into it. But the point is, if we really pay attention to this whole zodiac with good orientation and enough knowledge, we can really start to see the bigger picture. You know, also think about this. When you look at the picture of Plato's allegory, the allegory of the cave, this is exactly what that is. It's about starting in the darkness of the cave and then working your way up to the sun, being raised. It's the same science. Okay, maybe I'll explain that further in a presentation or another show. But anyway, cycles can really help us understand ages, which helps us understand the importance of time keeping. Okay, because time keeping helps us understand how to survive, you know, when to plant, when to harvest, and just really understanding cycles. And if we really dig deep enough, we can really start to understand major cycles like the Great Year, which is what helps us understand the cycles of a sun around its own pole, or the end of the 12 cycles of the zodiac, or it can help us understand ice ages. There's a lot that we can understand about this. And that is what helps us take back our sovereignty, okay? So on that note, I think the time has come for me to end this show. And I really appreciate you guys giving your time and your attention and tuning in. And if you are interested in any more shows, presentations, or news, you can go to cubbyhole.com. And if you have any questions regarding the topics for these shows, please email me at cubbyhole@mail.com. Okay? So please email me if you'd like to be on the list for any Cubbyhole news regarding the presentations or major events or the newest podcast episodes, and I will gladly put you on. Okay? That being said, I'm your host, Nate Kapp. Thank you for listening, and keep in mind to do no harm, defend truth, and keep transcending dogma.